My name is Ray Park. You may know me as playing Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, and also Solo at Star Wars Story. You're listening to Star Wars Stuff Podcast, The Force is Strong with You All. And remember, Sith Walk.
Hey, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, letting you all know you are listening to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Wishing everybody all the best, and may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars. My name's Hunter.
Oh, I'm Colin.
I'm Josh.
Wow, isn't it weird when we switch it up so it's like not in the order of the screens?
Yeah.
It was weird for me to go first.
Well, here we are. I guess we're talking about something, right?
Yep, we are talking about season 3, episode 8 of The Bad Batch, also called Bad Territory.
Florida.
Yep, yeah. Florida. Sounds like a Bad Company song.
Yeah.
Florida does sound like a Bad Company song.
So, yeah, we can get into it unless anyone wants to talk about general thoughts up front. I know we were sort of discussing that to begin the episode, so maybe we should just start with that. Colin, you said you had more to say once we started the podcast, so take it away.
It wasn't that this episode was a filler episode or anything. It was more of because the episode does kind of lead to the plot, but these past couple of episodes we've all been so used to the whole the season of just being plot driven. So when we got to this episode, it kind of felt like of what you were saying earlier, of where it was the adventure of the week, the destruction of the week, but it did have to do with the plot because we were jumping back and forth from what was going on with Hunter and Wrecker to what was going on with Omega and Crosshair, where Crosshair was trying to get back to his old self, which that has to do a decent amount with the plot because Crosshair has been conflicted these past couple of seasons. So the fact that we're kind of getting back on track to where Crosshair feels like a mold self, that kind of felt like plot driven. But everything else happening with Hunter and Wrecker where they're in Florida and they're fighting gators was just a whole other thing. But yeah,
I think you touched on what I was saying before we actually started the pod. I was describing this episode not as adventure of the week, but as distraction of the week from the actual main storyline. It was still progressing it, but it was like diverting our attention away from what was actually happening with the overall plot while things sort of happened in the background. We had Omega and Crosshair and them trying to get Crosshair to address his tremor in his hand. And that, hey, that's probably not just a physical issue. You can't just grin and bear it. You actually have to learn how to deal with this. And then on the other hand, we have Wrecker and Hunter going off on an adventure of the week. But that adventure of the week was still a actual plot device to further the main storyline of the season. And I think in a way, Wrecker and Hunter, the way they act, especially when we get to the end of the episode, which we'll talk about, they kind of view it as a distraction of the week too. Like they're sort of pissed off at the end of it that Fennec has just sort of led them on through this whole side quest, and now they still have to wait to get what they want.
I think at the end of the episode, it was one of those where you could tell they're kind of setting up for the second half of the season. This is the turning point. This is, episode 8 of 16. And so at the end of it, we, tried to pay off some of that previous of having Ming-Na Wen return with Fennec Shand, pay off a character that we've seen before in the show, had the Batch interact, but have Hunter and Wrecker re-interact with her, show kind of the evolution of those two characters in this short period of time between then and there. And we know that where we're moving forward, we're probably going to be getting a lot more of what we've been having so far this season. Really fast-moving, plot-forward, character-focused episodes. This was kind of the, as much as it sucks to say, it was kind of like the break of that to be able to set up what the next storylines that they want to be able to tell. If they jump straight into I think certain characters just coming in, although we might have really enjoyed that speed and that kind of timeliness on just keeping pushing new things. At the end of the day, I think they really wanted to take their time and be able to set up what's coming next and make sure it kind of makes sense in a more of a lore perspective, I guess. It's just kind of how I'm explaining this episode. But that distraction definitely was, I wish we got more time on Pabu, which I rarely say. The whole Crosshair and Omega thing was really, really, really nice to see. And I think if we didn't have that, everyone's opinion on this episode would be very different.
Yeah, I agree. That was, those moments on Pabu, even though they were brief, were the real meat of this episode to me.
Yeah. I really do wish that we actually spent more time on Pabu. And I think it was important that it was just Omega and Crosshair and that they had Hunter and Wrecker somewhere else. I think that relationship between the two of them and continuing that is really important.
Yeah, for sure. So with all that being said, do we want to jump into the actual episode?
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
All right. So we start out on Pabu with the whole batch and Omega talking about them leaving, and the decision is eventually made for Wrecker and Hunter to leave. And then obviously Omega is not necessarily happy about having to stay behind, but it was interesting to me how her face kind of lights up a little bit, or at least she seems a lot less unhappy about having to be left behind when Hunter specifically says to her, "Hey, convince Crosshair to actually start looking after himself and figure out what's up with his tremors."
I think from the perspective of someone who just did an internship, it sounded the exact same way as like when you're like kind of like the small guy at a job and they're like, "Hey, you can't come do the super awesome thing, but here's this little task that's just yours to do." And I'm like, "Hell yeah." And I think that it's a very good leadership tactic, and it shows Hunter's, you know, prowess as being a good leader of the batch. He knows kind of how to make sure people are happy doing what they have to do to get the job done. I also wanted to comment, Pabu on the opening shot seemed really white. Like it was like springtime flowers or something on the trees. I don't know, but I saw that. I was like, I wonder if there's any significance to kind of all the flowers or all the trees are kind of in bloom as opposed to being green.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing I did skip over really quick was us seeing Fee again for the first time this season, right? We haven't seen her yet.
Yes. Yep. First of the season, and she mentioned Tech.
Yes.
Yes.
Which this might also be one of the first times that Tech was mentioned in a significant way, and we didn't get a shot of everyone looking super depressed. I don't think that really means anything, but I noticed it because she said Fee, and I got depressed, and then it didn't show the other characters being depressed like normal.
Yeah. I saw her, and I immediately thought of the Juggernaut that we've seen in the trailer so many times.
Yes, I am
like, that's so just like racking excited in my head. We're like, I know we're going to see Fee related to this event. When are we going to get it? Because time started running out. I'm like, I really don't want that to be the like episode 14 thing. I really want them to get back to good meat and potatoes. And frankly, a Juggernaut episode kind of sounds a little Adventure of the Week. Starting to get concerned it might become that.
Look, even if it is, I'm super, super pumped to see a turbo tank again because those are one of my favorite Star Wars vehicles for the clones.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So it's going to be cool. And I feel like the shots we see of it in the trailer, they feel very heisty to me. Like, it gave me the same vibe as the train robbery in Solo. And if they're trying to rob something that helps them along their quest, I don't think it's going to be another just adventure of the week that's an extraneous thing. I think it's going to be more like this one, another distraction of the week. I know I've said that a whole bunch already, but I feel like that's a good way to classify it.
Do you think if we see, or when we see the turbo tank, it'll keep the interior geometry and layout as it had in Battlefront 2?
It'll probably be similar, but the thing I'm kind of most curious about is the scale, because it's a bit smaller than what we get in those old cross section books. The old cross section books had the turbo tanks being just massive.
Yeah, so that is very true.
I don't know where they're gonna go. The scale in the trailer looked closer to what we see in Battlefront, so I would expect them to stick with that. And obviously, you got to think that's the easiest reference they have on hand, you know?
Yeah, I hope they kind of fill it out a bit more, because in the end of the day, it was just kind of like two layers with ramps on either side. And I kind of hope they fill it out and make it feel like a military vehicle as opposed to just an indoor space for a shooter game.
Yeah. And maybe they'll put more in there. I forget if we saw the interior to any of them in the Clone Wars at all.
No, I don't think we ever...
I know we saw the inside of ATTEs, but I don't think we saw the interior of a turbo tank at all.
I think the only time we saw that turbo tank was like the Coruscant area of just like the GARs.
No, there was a few. I feel like we saw them on Felucia and stuff, but anyway, that's
completely not even this episode.
Yes. Don't worry. That will eventually come. I like how they keep saying I like how just every character keeps saying M count and they're avoiding the word midichlorian.
I don't know if do you guys think they're avoiding saying it or they just don't know what M stands for yet.
I think the M count is the like scientific term for it. Okay, and then M count. And then it's going to be midichlorians. And the character's going to be like, what on earth does that mean? And we're going to be like, we saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah. Because I know that got some backlash after the Phantom Menace came out of Qui-Gon Jinn kind of explaining the Force. And then they kind of explained of what that was. And then you never heard of them talk about it again. And then
they're
at
a point now they're not apologizing for those movies anymore, though. I mean, Ahmed Best came back.
They shouldn't have to apologize at all.
At this point, I think by just saying M counts and midichlorians, it's probably just like the scientific way of saying it. Because there's absolutely no reason that they wouldn't say midichlorians in order to like nod out of Phantom Menace, I guess is a way to put it.
Yeah, I remember that scene too, and I feel like it was George trying to recreate the scene from A New Hope of where Luke is like, "What's the Force?" and you know, it's what binds the galaxy together, like of that scene. But he was trying to add more scientific terms to that whole scene, and it confused the audience is what my understanding was. So it makes sense why
they're saying that. Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe the general public reaction to it. And I know we're getting off on a tangent again, but the way I view it, you look at the way the galaxy is going in the OT versus the prequel trilogy, it almost like regresses. And in the prequels, it's a lot more like science and art focused before it just devolves into this military industrial complex. And to me, it makes sense that they'd focus on more minute details like that, that would then be forgotten because they really don't serve a purpose in the Empire.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting point to like forgotten history within Star Wars and how much the galaxy kind of shifts and resets. Very interesting.
So anyway, back to the episode. The next that we get to is Wrecker and Hunter landing on the space station. So the space station, I don't know if it's just me being lost in the Star Wars sauce, but it looked super familiar
to me. It looks like the Ring of Khafrin from Rogue One. That's where I tied
it. Yeah. Or maybe it's that it's a similar space station aesthetic, but
like the kind of two things with a kind of like stalagmite, stalactite connection point in the middle.
I saw it as, so if you look at a buzz droid, right, and you kind of turn it to the side, I saw, I think that was the first thing that like kind of popped in my head. And I did get the familiar type station thing from Rogue One too, but yeah, I know exactly of what you're talking about. But yeah.
So yeah, we land on the space station. They're wandering through. It's got some pretty cool, that neon Coruscant underworld vibe. And then we stumble into the cantina with Fennec. And before we actually talk about Fennec, I want to talk about all the droids and the space station, because we see these really cool security droids, which remind me somewhat of the ones that we saw with Gungi in the last season. And then we've seen other similar types too. They got that like L3 style ish head, and then protocol droid bodies, or protocol droid ish humanoid bodies. But then most importantly, we have this pit droid bartender wearing this amazing hat, and he's just wandering around pouring drinks. And then he just wallops a dude with a bottle.
Yeah. The penalty for killing someone is just, you're knocked out now.
Yeah. Like, all right, well, not at my bar. And then crack, and the dude's just out of it. So props to that pit droid. We see more pit droids in this episode too, but I thought it was
really a lot of pit droids.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun concept to, and we get this in like the certain point of view books too, but it's always fun when we go from, oh, we don't serve your kind here, to having droids run a bar and then just totally owning it.
Also really liked in that bar scene. One, this episode was really dark. And they use a lot of like Solo-style, more atmospheric lighting, that any of the lights was diegetic. It was only what you could have seen on screen. It didn't add a lot of like extra stuff to try and make sure that everything was purely visible. And you noticed that when they walked into the bar, it was very dark. A lot of the purples and the blues were the only thing illuminating it. And I really loved the shot when Hunter and Wrecker come up to the bar and they're talking to the bartender, the pit droid boy. And the camera shot of them asking for Fennec, like, we know they're asking for Fennec, so it's just far away. It lets you take in the entire environment, almost like we're Fennec seeing them come in, or like another patron of the bar seeing this happen from a
farther it's pretty point tight, of view. Pretty tight shots.
I really enjoyed that farther one where it kind of just let everything be. You got to see everything. You didn't even hear what Hunter and Wrecker were saying. They're kind of just, you just see their helmets moving up and down with the bar. It's really cool.
Yeah, I dig it. Cool lighting, too.
Yeah.
So they talk with Fennec. They question her about the M-Count bounties and stuff. She says she hasn't taken any herself. She knows someone who has. And then she's like, all right, well, if you want info, you guys got to help me with this job. And maybe it was just me watching this at 6 in the morning and being really tired. But the way she walked through that conversation, it made me think she was saying, oh, hey, this person who has a bounty on their head, they are the ones who know about the M count bounties.
I didn't see it like that. I saw it as a help me help you type thing.
Right. I got that.
I
liked
the idea
of that Venn diagram.
Yeah. I really like the idea that Fennec was not going to join them on the mission, and she was going to send them out, and she was just kind of like becoming a replacement Sid, solely for the fact that we haven't heard or seen of Fennec at all in the OT or in the Clone Wars. So I kind of like the idea that in her own missions, oftentimes she's like gets other people to do the job for her, and she kind of just sits in the background.
Yeah.
As like a kind of like a way to explain that away. I kind of liked that idea. And then that was shot in like 47 seconds, but
so Fennec pulls out the bounty for what's the guy's name? I have it pulled up right here so I remember it. Because I'm gonna go on a tangent about this guy because he got me super excited. So she pulls out a bounty puck for
yep.
Sylar Saris, which looks like a praying mantis, which is a callback to an alien in the back corner of the cantina in episode four. The mm-hmm. species, everyone just calls the alien Yamri, but that's actually the species name. But it's really just like a big praying mantis, which is super, super awesome. And it's this really, really obscure OT cantina alien. And I just eat that kind of stuff up. But it's cool yeah. that they brought that callback in to such a classic alien that also has a really strong tie to the rest of the OT through the actor that played it. Jack Purvis was the guy's name who actually puppeteered that initial giant praying mantis. And he had a bunch of other really important background roles in the OT as well. He played one of the Jawas in A New Hope. He played one of the lead Ugnaughts, and then he played Tebow in Jedi as well. But to me, I don't know. I thought that was super neat for them to bring in such a deep cut like that when they could have just made them a Rodian or an Aqualich yeah. or some other random alien. I don't know.
The that's extent of my icy big bug, I was like, oh, that's funny. We're going to Florida and there's a giant bug that they're hunting. That's the extent of my that was nice.
Yeah, this episode was kind of a Florida parody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Rodian. Did anyone else see the Rodian talking to Fennec? And you kind of cross your fingers and you're like, I know it's unlikely. I know it's kind of stupid.
Yes.
This Greedo. Yeah.
I knew exactly what you were going to say because the same thought crossed my mind.
Yep.
I was hoping, but at the same time, I was trying to figure out of what he would be doing in the timeline at this point, because his entire career, he's pretty much trying to create this big illusion that he is an important bounty hunter like Boba Fett and stuff, but in reality he's not. And I love that, man. There was a deleted scene from The Phantom Menace where you actually see him as a kid and he fights with Anakin. Yes. And they cut that, and I wish they kept it in.
Well, now we just get Wald. Wald is okay, I guess.
Yeah. Oh man, I definitely have that hope, because I was like, maybe he's wearing a costume very similar to his one from A New Hope, but then you hear him talk, and then you see his outfit, and you're like, no, it's not Greedo. Darn it.
Isn't it interesting how us specifically, but we as a fan community, always go back and forth between like, oh yeah, give us this super random deep cut cameo of a character that really doesn't need to be this character. And then other times you're like, oh, come on, it has to be this same character or a relative of this one character.
I think the only exception to that are the bounty hunters from the OT.
Yeah.
Give them to me anywhere and everywhere. I want them to be infamous. Yeah. And the only way to make an infamous bounty hunter is I see them all the time.
Josh,
yes,
you are preaching to the choir here.
I know I am. That's why I'm basic. It's like there's no one that can disagree with that. It's just an objective fact.
So there's and again, we're going off tangent, but it's called Star Wars stuff, so it's fine. It's Star Wars stuff.
It's only 23 minutes of 60.
Yeah. but there is from the new Acolyte trailer. I think we were blowing up the chat last night when pretty much everyone was asleep, but there's that scene where the Jedi are kind of staring off. And if you look to the bottom right, there is a Jedi that is the same species as Plo Koon. Some of us were saying, oh, it's Plo Koon. But then there was me that was saying, there are other Jedi in the order at this time that I would love for it to be Plo Koon. There is a high chance that it is. But there's another chance that it's not Plo Koon, because there regardless, are other Jedi that have the record.
Seeing more Keldor is going to be awesome regardless.
Yes, yes. And if James Arnold Taylor is in the suit and he's voicing him and all that stuff, I think that would be great, because I think that would be his first live-action appearance in the actual,
I think Star Wars universe.
Because I know he's done some fan films, but...
Yeah.
Question. When you guys were a kid, were you a Plo Koon kid or a Kit Fisto kid? Because for some reason,
I was a Plo Koon kid.
That just like,
Josh asked me this earlier today. I was a Plo Koon kid as well.
Yeah, I was a Kit Fisto kid. I like.
It's not that I didn't like Kit Fisto.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense, Josh.
Maybe it does, but. I really liked the Origami Yoda books when I was a kid for some reason. And I made my own Origami Kit Fisto. Like, I developed my own Origami Kit Fisto finger puppet. And I published the tutorial on, like, the Origami Yoda. They had, like, a site or something. And then I saw, like, a derivation of that design used in, like, a future book. And it was super cool. I didn't get credited at all. I was like, I made, like, half of those folds. They changed, two things.
I thought Kit Fisto was a really cool character, but I hated that he got killed, very quickly in episode 3, just because he was the second best swordsman in the entire Jedi Order. So
Through some stuff. Did you see his
face? I was just going to comment on that. That's part of the reason I wasn't a big Kit Fisto kid. I was like, dude, you just go off the deep end and...
He's post doctorate year.
Why does your face look like that? It's only been 3 years.
Yeah. No, I was definitely a Plo Koon kid. Just because of that line from that first episode that he's in, and the clones are, I'm gonna butcher the crap out of this line. But the clones are like, no one's gonna come in. Rescue us, we're just clones. Like, and then he's like, not to me. And I was like, that is a Jedi that cares. And like, I love that.
That's exactly why I was a Plo Koon kid too. His interaction with Sinker and Boost and Wolf in that Shadow of Malevolence arc was super, super eye opening as far as the dynamic between Jedi and clones go.
Mm-hmm. Anyways,
back to Mad Max.
There's one shot I really want to comment. I want to make sure I don't miss this. I'm racking my brain.
Here we go.
You can keep going though.
The next sequence that we go to after Fennec gives Wrecker and Hunter a job, basically to help her hunt down the Praying Mantis, is back on Pabu. So we start with AZ doing an exam on Crosshair's hand. And it was kind of interesting to me. AZ was like, I've looked at it. We've exhausted every medical test possible and there's nothing I can do. And I'm like, all right, man, I know you're working with what you got on Pabu, but you can't have exhausted everything.
Yeah, the final thing that he could exhaust was like a scan. Like, what are you, Baymax?
Right. I know the purpose of that conversation was to get to the point that, hey, it's actually in your head. It's not a physical thing that's wrong with you. But still, I was like, AZ, come on, man. You should have a medical degree. You're a med droid. You should be able to tell him what's going on.
I absolutely agree. It kind of felt like that was one of the rush things, and that would have been fun to kind of see AZ interact with Crosshair more in a medical sense, I guess, like trying to see some of what AZ considers full medical diagnoses. I think that it could have had some like fun comedy bits to intersect into this.
Yeah.
And also, that'd just be more time on Pabu with the two characters that I really did want to see interact this episode. That would have been fun to see. But yeah, it was one of those like, and we're directly moving on to what we have to type things.
And that's really all we get on Pabu for the time being. Next, we cut back to Fennec and Hunter and Wrecker. Mm-hmm. And Fennec is basically giving them the lowdown while they're in hyperspace, and then they land on the planet and start going after the bounty.
I had a lot of flashbacks. I was just like, wow, I feel like it's Florida. It's
yeah, it, we land and it just the way that they paint the environment immediately just feels humid and sticky.
Yeah,
and I love flashbacks. Rusty
and grimy.
The door opening.
Yes.
The door opening, yep. And you see all of their silhouettes on this orange backdrop. And I really loved the vehicle because it wasn't the classic. Because when I think of swamp ships.
Before you get to the vehicle, I just got to
I'm so sorry.
Pitroids manning the hangar. And the dude, the little guy's out there being a foreman. He's got this cool green and yellow paint job, checking him in. And he's like, yeah, I'll sell you a boat. And then takes him out, and now we get to the boat that Josh is talking about.
Yeah, now we're on the boat. The boat was like, we got the little thing from Phoenix. She's like, "Oh, is that really going to be 10,000?" And then the pitcher was like, "She's like, that's what I thought." And I thought it was really, really nice that like they didn't. She didn't go 6,000 sounds better or what? Like they gave us a full conversation without. We only gave us like a quarter of it because then the pit droids started talking to each other.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really fun. But that shot of the doors opening, and I really liked how we didn't have another Nal Hutta. What's it called when it's the giant freaking fan on the back of a raft, basically?
Fan boat.
Fan boat. Wow. America.
I'm telling you right now, it like if people in the Florida garrison are listening, you have a wonderful opportunity of building something like this, and it fits perfectly. Yeah, so please do it. It'd be so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was... But
I think the hydrofoil design is super neat. That's...
Yeah.
It's like it's a thing that exists in the real world, but you still don't see a lot, and I'm not really sure if you've ever seen a hydrofoil in Star Wars.
I don't...
Regardless...
We have. I think we haven't seen it because they didn't have, like, the water simulation ability to make it passable in this animation style. It was really interesting to see the different wakes that they had for the ship when it was really slow versus when it was going fast. Like they had different wakes and how it traveled back behind them. It was different for all of those different speeds, which that was super neat.
Yep. So there's a little bit of time with them talking on the boat. Not a ton to really highlight there, but then they get to an area of the swamp, the bayou, the space, Louisiana space Everglades. And they stop the boat and realize that there's a whole bunch of mines in front of them. And Fennec convinces Wrecker and Hunter to jump out of the boat and try and disarm them. But what was really surprising to me here is they just jumped out of the boat, went underwater with full armor and buckets on, and seemed to be totally fine.
And it looked so good.
It looked dope.
But yes, absolutely agreed that they had fully water sealed, especially for how much. I don't know. I think I can understand the helmets being water sealed for like a limited period of time, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense because they're supposed to be environmentally.
Yeah. And their clothes are just getting absolutely soaked because they're in like regular garb.
Right.
Yeah. It's just so many mines. I thought it was also interesting that we got a little bit in a rough sense. This is like one of the first times we've seen Hunter as a tracker, which I say extremely loosely because we don't really see it that much as we did in like Clone Wars Season 7. We got to see like a little bit of it, or at least just a talk about like, oh, you're. The reason that you're Clone Force 99 isn't because you have a different face. It's because you're really good at tracking.
Yeah, this is the first time we've actually highlighted Hunter's abilities in quite a while.
Yeah.
It's been a good long time. Like, they brought that up and I was like, oh, yeah, I completely forgot that I think the last time it was brought up was when they crash landed in Season 2 and Hunter was like, there's a city over that way. Cause I can like feel the electromagnetic or whatever.
Yeah.
No, that was like the last time we got it.
So they're disarming the mines. They get through pretty much all of them. And then we get some space alligators coming to attack them, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. So I kind of had a flashback because I was filming. So when I was living in Florida, there's a trail that's like a nature trail that wasn't far from where I was living. Right. And I posted a video, like I think like last week, of where I was in my Narcina prison suit and like I was running. I shot that on that nature trail and I was alone on that trail. But every time that I walked, I heard like movement. And I always thought there was a gator that was just lurking.
It was space alligators.
Yes.
Space alligators and praying mantis people.
Yeah, exactly. Florida. There you go.
So they fight off the gators, which is kind of cool to see them wrestle with an animal as far as animation is concerned. But they do that. They keep going on the boat and eventually get to the praying mantis dude's hut. They break in. They go after him. There's a bit of a chase scene there. And then we end up with them stunning him, dropping him. And then we cut back to Pabu for some more discussion between Omega and Crosshair, where she's basically telling him, hey, you got to get over yourself and we're going to try some new stuff. We're going to try some not physical methods of you trying to get better. We're going to focus on your mind because that's obviously something that's a problem here that was affected by all the experiments on Tantus. So there's this, I thought, pretty touching meditation scene where Omega's teaching Crosshair how to meditate. She mentions Gungi and the Wookiees, and that's where she learned it. And Crosshair is like, whoa, you've been to Kashyyyk? And
yeah,
I think that stuff like that keeps coming up in the show. And I think that every time it happens to me, it really emphasizes that, oh, Omega's growing up. She's got all these experiences and really knows what she's doing in a lot of situations. And it's there as much to remind us as it is to remind the Bad Batch members themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this scene with some meditation. Crosshair, I forget if it was during this sequence or another one, but Crosshair had one line where he's like, oh, it's not going to be easy, is it? And for some reason, that line really stuck out to me. That was a very, I sort of hate to say it this way, but it was like a very soft moment for Crosshair. He's usually pretty cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool to see Omega getting through to him that way and getting him to be more introspective.
I definitely agree. I love the kind of change of not attitude, but just of the way that Crosshair is this season, because he is recognizing that him leaving really affected everyone. And at first, like, he really wasn't like accepting that, but now that he is, he's seeing like how great Omega is. And I just love the whole sibling vibe too. I really enjoy that. He's just kind of embracing it. And we saw that in the first couple of episodes. So I love the change and of the latter path that Crosshair is going on. And I also love how, like, he's not like, I'm not doing this. You can see that he is opening up more and he's accepting, you know, of where he is now. And I really enjoy that character growth for him.
I think it was really interesting that, like, comparing Omega just from season one to now, is they've handled that character growth extremely well. I think her role within the batch has grown strongly and very just well written in general. at the start, Omega was the kind of audience surrogate to the Bad Batch. That was kind of, you know, one of those main things is developed back when Robin was first made for Batman. It's just the a character for children to relate to put themselves in that story. It was really interesting because this episode, Crosshair became the audience surrogate for almost everything. He was the one asking, who's this person that you're going to go talk to on the hologram? What's the, like, he was the one asking the questions, kind of refresh season two for starting this next bit of season three. So it was really interesting to see that they were like, oh, we can't really use Omega as our audience surrogate anymore. We have to now use Crosshair. Mm-hmm. That was just a very interesting dynamic change.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see both of them change and grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we get through the meditation scene, and now we are back on the space station. Presumably they've turned in the bounty. And then Fennec is like, all right, see you guys later. Or sorry, they haven't turned in the bounty yet. Fennec has to go do that. But regardless, Fennec is like, all right, bye guys. See you later. Thanks for your help. And Hunter and Wrecker are just kind of like, hey, hold up. What do you mean? You said you were going to give us info. And she's like, well, I don't actually have it. So you just got to wait for me. And she just leaves. And they are rightfully pissed off and frustrated that they just spent their time fighting alligators and catching a praying mantis and still have to sit there and wait.
Who do you think that she was talking to?
I'm thinking the same thing.
I'm thinking maybe Ventress. That might be maybe too on the nose. I know.
I think it's going to be Bane. We know that he is like the big name bounty hunter at the time. And I know they sort of had beef before.
Yeah.
But it's more just that they were competing on a bounty. It's not like they were necessarily personally against each other. It was just a business thing, right? And it makes sense to me that probably the most notorious bounty hunter in the galaxy at this time is going to be someone who knows about these M count bounties. And
right, yeah,
she's gonna talk to Bane about it. Bane's gonna say, yep, the Empire wants him. He may or may not know. But he's going to say like, hey, all right, there's one outstanding bounty left, or one big one that I'm tracking down, and that's going to be Ventress. And yes, the Bad Batch is going to get that info, and then they are going to have to beat the bounty hunters to Ventress because they want to talk to her and learn about what M count is.
There you go.
Hear me out for throwing crap at a wall theory. I'm building this theory on the spot, and it's definitely not going to turn out to be true. But imagine she's talking to Boba.
Yes.
Because Daniel Logan only voiced one clone out of the three young clones that we got. They made a point to bring in a new voice actor to differentiate those characters. What if he comes back in? We get the Boba Fett versus Cad Bane duel that we saw the teaser of, like the raw, unedited.
Don't tease me about that, Josh.
And what if we get that in the Bad Batch as a clone's standoff and Boba Fett accepts his clone heritage?
Oh, my gosh.
Don't tease me like that.
I really, really would love that. I would love to have more of Boba Fett. I mean, I'm just going to say I felt like we were robbed of that scene that we never got of where it was Boba versus Cad Bane of where he got his the dent in his helmet.
I think about that Lost arc at least once a week.
It's so good. It's so good.
That is I would have so much preferred that over the Martez sister arc, but that's a discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The only good part about that arc is is there an echo in here joke?
Yes.
Yes.
As much as I would love to see that, Josh, I don't think, I almost don't want that here because I don't feel like we have enough time to give that story justice as yeah. well as make the Ventress thing make sense and whatever else they have planned.
You know? I absolutely agree. But now hear me out, Hunter. Boba Fett's owed one episode of a TV show.
Dude, as far as I'm concerned, he's owed a lot more than that. And it better be in the next Mando season or movie or whatever.
Yeah. We will never forget. Yeah. I will always remember the day of where I turned on my TV and Boba Fett wasn't even in a show. And I was like, ah.
I honestly just watched Mandalorian season 2. Amazing Boba Fett.
I
feels completely wish, detached from.
I wish Cap was on here this evening to commiserate, because I know they totally agree with me. And that comes up all the time. But yeah, it's.
But
who knows? I love Boba Fett.
But we'll find out next week, almost for certain.
Hey, that's what I thought about the CX clone from last week, but here we are.
No. Only time will tell. I felt like the episode just kind of flew by, and I was especially after she got talking to the mysterious person, I was like, darn it, like, come on.
I know they cut it off so quick and it left you wanting a lot more, which it makes me really excited for next week, that's for sure.
We are slowly getting closer. You know, we still haven't seen Cad Bane yet, we still haven't seen Ventress yet, we still haven't seen Max Rebo yet. Like, of the possibilities are endless. So
we haven't seen Delta Squad yet.
You haven't seen Boss yet.
I mean, here's the thing. If Boba Fett shows up, I really want Bosk to be there. I think that would just make sense.
I want him to be homies.
Yeah. Just like in the Clone Wars. Yeah. If you have a problem with Boba, you got a problem with me. It's just like, yo, let's go. So come on, man. He's so cool. But yeah, Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's really.
Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps the episode up for us. Colin, you want me to try and remember how to land the ship now that I'm attempting to lead an episode?
I mean, sure.
Not to worry. For it. We're still flying half a ship.
Something like that. All right, well, that wraps up this week's episode of our Bad Batch commentary, as well as season 3, episode 8 of the Bad Batch. So thank you all for listening. Big shout out to our patrons. We can't do this without you guys. And it's because of you guys liking us that Colin brought us out from behind the paywall. So here we are. All of you, shout outs to you down below.
If you don't like us, blame the patrons.
So, yeah, what Josh said. But if you do like us, you can support the show on Patreon to get even more content from crazy people like me, Josh, Star, Cap, and Christian. And you can find more than just on Patreon from all of us, too, at the handles down below, too, that Colin will pull up on the scrolling text at the bottom.
We're so at Star Wars
Podcast 2187 about Star Wars.
Yes, those commentaries are a lot of fun, and you'll see us more unhinged on there as well.
Yeah, if you like me going on a tangent about praying mantis people, the content we put on Patreon is for you. So
there you go. There. Yeah. Oh man. Yep. And you can find us on Instagram at Star Wars Stuff Pod, Twitter at Stuff Pod. Threads at Star Wars Stuff Pod. You can also find us on TikTok, Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Please email us at Star Wars Stuff podcast@gmail.com. You can also go to Facebook, Star Wars Stuff Group, Star Wars Stuff Podcast page.
Literally gaming. Every platform, find us, because you like Star Wars as much as we do.
If there's a platform that Colin has yet to make an account for us on, I challenge you to find it.
Fair enough. Do we have any closing words of wisdom? Anything?
Watch out for those praying mantises.
Watch those wrist rockets.
There you go. May the force be with you always.